Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us this afternoon Dr. Asa Durakovich, and we're going to be talking about depleted uranium and its dangers to the human body. Dr. Durakovich, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Well, could you just give us a little of your background? Now, you've been studying the effect of depleted uranium on the human body for some time, haven't you?
Well, my first papers on uranium and transuranic elements were published 30 years ago. I was doing extensive research on uranium health effects and metabolism when I was a fellow at National Research Council in Canada.
Now, right now, of course, we hear a lot about depleted uranium, and the idea that it's depleted, it sort of gives you the feeling that there's nothing to worry about. Is that simply the misuse of words and terminology to confuse people?
That is correct. Depleted uranium is nothing but uranium with the slightly less concentration of uranium-235. But it still contains isotopes like uranium-234 and 236. Depleted uranium contains uranium-236, which is man-made isotope not found in nature. Depleted uranium, obviously, like every other alpha emitter, containing radioisotopes of long half-life and high organospecificity, presents hazard to the human body when internalized.
And, of course, how is it internalized? Now, we know that certainly the military has this in the form of bombs and missiles and bullets and shells. And, of course, the military personnel pick this up. They handle it. They're not aware there's any danger. Is there any danger if you just pick up a bullet or you pick up a shell?
Of course there is a danger, because uranium, by the virtue of its alpha emission, would not present external danger. You can actually handle uranium projectile or metal for some time without exposing yourself to any significant radiation, because alpha radiation does not penetrate very far. But government research has stubbornly insisted that depleted uranium, or uranium per se, does not present the danger, because it should be, according to the government publications, taken into the body in the form of shrapnel or bullet wounds. And for about 12 years, Veterans Administration and government sources in the research, which I call pseudo-research, tried to say that the only conceivable way of contamination of civilian population or the soldiers is by being hit by the actual bullet or the fragment of the bullet. Now, such soldiers or such patients are not very numerous who contain the shrapnels, and most of the government research dealt with the shrapnels alone. They ignored the most important metabolic pathway, which is inhalational pathway.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a moment or two as we begin pulling some of our other stations in on this. But what we're talking about is the inhalation of this after it is the bullets or the bombs have been fired and exploded and burned and created the uranium oxide. And we'll be talking much more with Dr. Durakovich about this. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest today is Dr. Asa Durakovic, and he has been working on the danger of depleted uranium for many, many years. He's internationally known for his work and studies on this, and there is a conscious, organized effort to mislead the American people into believing that there's no danger from depleted uranium. After all, it's depleted. But as he points out, it's still nothing but uranium. All they do have taken out about less than 1% of the uranium-235, and they've left all the rest of the uranium there. And, of course, this is active uranium that can harm the human body. So you were talking about the inhalation. Could you develop this idea a little bit more?
Well, the studies of uranium inhalation of entry into the human organism are not too new. We have several decades of dedicated studies, but conspicuously not in the past 13 years. After the Gulf War I, such studies have suddenly stopped and been terminated. Now, when uranium or depleted uranium projectile hits the armor, like in the tank, for example, it has very high density, and also it has pyrophoric property. It burns upon the impact. So, number one, it penetrates through the steel with no effort because it is 1.7 times denser than lead. And number two, when it penetrates through the steel, it explodes, and in the contact with the air, it produces high temperatures of several thousand degrees centigrade. That creates radioactive cloud, if you like, because uranium baked upon the particles of the air is distributed from the site of the impact by the winds to the distant areas, and it can contaminate the civilian population that is far away from the battlefield.
And it really, there's sort of a dust that is actually produced then?
That is correct.
And is it, what is it? Is uranium oxide, or what is the dust made of?
It is ceramic uranium,
all right,
which is uranium oxide. Now, we know from the elementary physics that the blue sky that you are talking about in California is nothing but suspended particles of the dust in the air. That's Tyndall phenomenon, because sunlight reflects upon it and creates the spectrum of the blue color. Now, uranium being released from the side of the impact bakes actually on the particles of the dust.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought for just a moment when we pull in our last station here. All right, fine, Dr. Rakovic. But you go on, and you were saying that when this explosion occurs, when the missile or the bullet hits the object, there is burning, intense heat, and the formation of uranium oxide, which is a dust. But this is a radioactive dust, isn't it?
That is totally correct. That radioactive dust is not only radioactive, but it is the single most dangerous radioactivity that exists as far as human body is concerned. It is alpha radiation. And alpha radiation, although it has short pathway, it has enormous capability of creating ionization of the tissue, which means it pulls the electrons from the atomic structures on its path in the body, and it disintegrates tissue, or it may cause changes in the genetic code of the different cells.
Well, now, of course, once it gets into the body, it would get in through the lungs and then would be absorbed in the bloodstream, passing then through the alveoli into the bloodstream and then going all throughout the body. Is that how it would be disseminated?
That is correct. We have to talk about two forms of uranium. One is soluble, the other is non-soluble. In the contamination by the inhalational pathway, we are talking about non-soluble uranium, which is retained in the bronchoalveolar tissue, and taken by the macrophages to the dependent lymph nodes, tracheobronchial lymph nodes. Then uranium ultimately can circulate and recirculate in the body with ultimate deposition in the bone, which is the target organ of uranium, where it can cause malignant changes or genetic changes. So the effects of uranium in the body are somatic and genetic effects, and they have been just well established by the scientific literature in the past 200 years.
Well, now, of course, as far as the genetic, this would mean then that this would actually could perhaps be something that would be passed on to your children genetically, or would your children be born deformed? Or would this affect your own genetic structure?
That is correct. I was stationed in the Soviet Union. I was sent by the United States government to Senate Palatinsk in Kazakhstan in the year 1987. And in the villages that I visited, we saw many deformed children. Now, that site of Kazakhstan is site of the nuclear test, and uranium contamination was very high. So I am a live witness about high incidence of the deformities in the areas that have been contaminated with the uranium isotopes. In addition, in Sweden, for example, just a couple of years ago, they found higher incidence of leukemia in the children of immigrants in Sweden, and the study was done trying to analyze why is the incidence of leukemia higher in the immigrant children than in Scandinavian children. And it was found that those children lived in the housing complexes that are made of DU-crete, which is cement that contains depleted uranium.
All right. Well, now, what really happened as far as the people of Kuwait and of Iraq after the first Gulf War? Were they exposed to depleted uranium because of the massive amounts of shells that we fired during that time?
That is a fascinating question, because a year ago I was presenting keynote talk at a conference of military medicine in Doha, Qatar, and the same question was asked when I gave my lecture: can people of Qatar or Bahrain or Saudi Arabia or Kuwait be contaminated by uranium isotopes? And I said it's naive to think otherwise, because uranium, as I indicated before, is taken by the wind to the distances of tens and perhaps hundreds of kilometers. And it had been proven in New York State, for example, that the depleted uranium was found in the air filters 40 miles away from the naval training site in New York State. So it does travel, and it does deposit in the environment, in the human bodies, and we found it in both civilians and the military personnel of the United States, Canada, and Britain. It was published in the American Journal of Military Medicine.
Well, of course, is it harmful, or how harmful is it? I mean, certainly people can have very low-dose radiation without getting into troubles, but is there enough there to really produce the complications that we speak of?
Well, low-dose radiation is more important than high-dose radiation, because high-dose radiation would probably cause necrosis and lethal effects on the cells. Low-dose radiation is exceedingly more interesting because it produces very subtle changes in the target tissues, and as I said before, it can cause malignant alterations of the cells or genetic changes which can go for generations. So indeed, there are many and many scientific studies and recent publications which are uniform in agreement that uranium isotopes are dangerous for the human body. They can cause cancer, they can cause leukemia, they can cause genetic changes, they can cause neurotoxicity, they can cause alterations in the immune system. And all of these things have been scientifically proven.
Now, what about the lungs? What about the fact that they're inhaling this material into the lungs? Does that affect the lungs themselves?
Absolutely. And the bronchial epithelium is particularly sensitive to the isotopes of depleted uranium or uranium, and we know that human lung is more sensitive to the alpha radiation than lungs of experimental animals. In our studies, we have found that dose at the time zero, calculated by exponential mathematical model, is higher in the American soldiers that inhaled uranium isotopes in the first Gulf War than in the control population. Yes, lung is a target organ, because uranium stays in the lung if it is non-soluble for a considerable length of time, and also in the lung lymph nodes, where it is taken by the blood elements that try to clean the bronchi from the deposited uranium.
Well, we know that of the original 695,000 American servicemen and women who went to the Gulf, the Veterans Administration has admitted that well over 200,000 of them have some sort of an illness we call Gulf War illness. And, of course, some people say there are many others who have not been able to establish a claim but are seriously ill. Do you think that part of this is the exposure to the depleted uranium?
Many new studies are essential to be performed, and the governments of the United States, Canada, Britain, and other countries simply do not do those studies.
Well, do you think that's because this is such an effective weapon? After all, the purpose of the military is to kill people and to destroy things, and depleted uranium is one of the greatest weapons ever developed.
There is no doubt about it. It is the most effective anti-armor weapon that has ever existed in the history of warfare. There is no doubt about it. It is a superior weapon. But radioactive warfare has been forbidden by the Geneva Conventions, as we know very well. So, in addition to being very effective in the field of battle, it's also very effective in causing harmful effects to the exposed population. Now, we are not talking only about Allied forces, soldiers. We are talking about totally innocent population of the countries in which those weapons are being used.
Well, do we have any idea whether the population of Kuwait or the population of Iraq prior to the Second War were having any effects? You know, were they having any effects of this depleted uranium, or is there any way to evaluate that?
Well, there are many ways to evaluate it. We can do, number one, studies of the retention and excretion of depleted uranium and uranium isotopes, and my institution is currently doing those studies. We have taken samples in the two field trips in Iraq from Baghdad, Basra, Nasiriyah, Karbala, Al-Qasib, and other places, Samawa, and we found the civilian population of Iraq after the Second Gulf War contains considerable percentage of population that excretes uranium isotopes. In addition, we have analyzed about a dozen of the United States soldiers who just came from Iraq deployment, and we are currently preparing the manuscript of our findings in the U.S. soldiers who just came after the Second Gulf War.
And, of course, all of our soldiers, or so many of them, are in this area with this massive contamination from the shock and awe where we flew in the missiles, we dropped the bombs. And aren't almost all of these uranium made of this uranium, this depleted uranium, so that they would be more effective?
Yes. I just came from a trip to Japan where I gave lectures at several universities. And I showed the pictures of the destroyed tanks in the Baghdad and Basra, where children are playing and people are conducting their normal lives in the vicinity of the highly radioactive debris that remained after the war. There is no effort to do comprehensive cleanup procedures of the soil and the environment in those areas, because it would be a monumental task to clean the areas that are contaminated with uranium isotopes, because it is really large surfaces of the environment.
Well, do you feel that many of these children and adults will eventually come down with the effects of the radiation poisoning from chronic uranium intoxication?
Speaking from the theoretical viewpoint, my answer is yes. However, practical evaluation still needs to illuminate the clinical manifestations of the delayed contamination with uranium. And we are planning at Uranium Medical Research Center to conduct the studies on the renal system, on the lungs, or on the immune system, in the clinical departments of the different university hospitals. And we are currently doing that preliminary work. Now, question is, why do not the government of the different countries do that?
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Durakovich.
most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about a couple of the items we carry. One of them is called Funopoly. A Funopoly is a board game. It's played like Monopoly, but it's designed to teach you and your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, this is the key to proper reading, unfortunately, because of the influence of the National Educational Association and other people who have a different vision of what the world should be, they've dumbed down our students. And as incredible as it may seem, with all the money we invest in education in the United States today, we have some of the lowest reading scores in the entire world. We rank there with Latvia and Lithuania, just a little bit below them. Why? Because they're not teaching our children how to read properly. Phonics is the key, and most of the programs to teach children to read phonetically are $300, $400, $500, $600, $800. Funopoly is $139.95, and of course you can get it by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And when you order Funopoly from Radio Liberty, we give you a couple of books that go into the background of who it is and why they have actually dumbed down the children of our country. And it really has to do with this geopolitical view of a new world order and a new world religion. And then, of course, we want to mention our Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims at all about them. We can simply tell you that many of the people who use them tell us amazing stories about how it's happened, this rash or acne or their stomach or their heartburn. Or all we can do is say, try the items. Maybe you'll be able to have them help you. There is a soap and a moisturizing soap, a lotion and a gel, and a neutralizing solution. It's very alkaline, and that's what people take for their heartburn. And I know my wife takes it, and she seems to feel that she doesn't have to take the pills very often today. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask about the Miracle soap products, and I don't think you'll be unhappy if you try them. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Durakovich, and of course he has his own institute that is actually studying this. Is there a website or any way people could get in touch with you, organization, if they wanted to?
Yes, there is a website, and also they can get in touch with me on my personal email.
All right. What was the website and the email?
Website, I would have to quote to you later. My email is asaf@umrc.net.
I'm sorry, umrc?
.net.
umrc.net. Now, the question was raised as to why governments aren't doing these studies. Certainly I could understand why our government or the British government wouldn't want to do it, because they want to be able to continue using the weapons. But what about some of the other governments in the world? My understanding is that there is a great deal of concern about the use of depleted uranium in many nations throughout the world.
Well, the question is complex, because number one, no government would want to admit that they are using illegal weapons. We know about specifications of the Geneva Conventions about weapons of indiscriminate effect, and the depleted uranium projectiles, or perhaps even the bombs, would be in the category of indiscriminate effect, because it really affects not only soldiers in the field of battle but also civilians. That is moral responsibility, that's number one. The other is fiscal responsibility, because you mentioned 200,000 American soldiers from the first Gulf War. My estimate is a little bit more conservative. I think it's about 80,000 of people who might have been contaminated with the uranium isotopes. Fiscal responsibility for those soldiers would be enormous. It would be in the range of billions of dollars to pay compensation to the people who have been contaminated with uranium isotopes. And of course, as you said, every country that has depleted uranium projectiles would like to continue using them. So there are multidimensional reasons why different countries do not want to address the issue. In 1997, I wrote a letter to President Clinton, and I indicated in my letter that Department of Veterans Affairs refuses to conduct the studies of uranium contamination, which I started in the VA hospital in Wilmington, Delaware, and I called it point-blank conspiracy against the soldiers of the United States. It was in 1997. And I believe that such conspiracy exists in the countries that have used depleted uranium in the battlefield. I am not going to mention individual countries, but whichever country uses it, they should be aware that it has certain legal and moral consequences.
All right, so the tragedy is, of course, that the people are coming down ill, and we know that certainly people not only in the only American military, but in other militaries are coming down ill. Well, weren't these weapons used in Bosnia and in Kosovo as well?
They have been used in Bosnia and Kosovo, and we have evidence of the clusters of the malignant diseases in Bosnia, southern Yugoslavia, Serbia, and in Kosovo.
Now,
have been under study.
Now, is this in the civilian population?
It is in civilian population. Also, some of the military personnel who were deployed in the Balkan Peninsula did show considerable clinical manifestations of the illness that resembles Gulf War illness. 3 years ago, I was a guest of the Roman television, and I was invited to give my opinions in Rome about Italian soldiers that suffered from the higher incidence of leukemia than normal population. And some of those soldiers died, and it was questioned by the Italian public what were the reasons for soldiers coming from Balkan Peninsula having such high incidence of leukemia. And like in every other instance, that curiosity died out, because it is quite clear that countries try to marginalize and obscure any questions about adverse effects of uranium isotopes.
Well, I know of going up on the internet, I find so many conflicting reports there, and you see one person says it's bad, and the next person says it's perfectly all right. And then, of course, I went to the Royal Institute, a British Royal Institute, and they really expressed concern about this. And they, to my way of thinking, are far more impartial on this than perhaps many of the medical organizations here in the United States. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Durakovich. And, if, of course, if you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295.
help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, A Road to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to mention that we do carry the Berkey water filters. We carry the Big Berkey, which is a stainless steel water filter that has ceramic filters that are packed with activated carbon. And if you don't like the taste of your water, you're concerned about herbicides and pesticides and other contamination of the water, you don't like the chlorine taste in it, why, you may very well want to get a Big Berkey water filter. It's great just to have around the house, and then if there was ever an emergency as far as the availability of water was concerned, why, you can put water from ponds and lakes and rivers into this. This is what missionaries have used for years. It's a standard. It's been around for a long time. It's cost $239.95 plus shipping, but the Big Berkey is available in every state but California and Iowa. However, if you are in the West Coast, California, there is a what we call a Berkey Light, and it's made of Lexan rather than stainless steel, so it's transparent, and you can see the water levels. The filters are called Black Berkey filters. They're really much more effective, but they have to be replaced every several years, whereas the Big Berkey filters can be washed and activated and boiled and used over and over again, so they'll last a great deal longer. Both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light can have special post-filters put on that will take out fluoride. And if you have fluoride in your water, you don't want it there. So let me suggest that you seriously consider getting either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. The Berkey Light is available in every state but Iowa. You can see the Berkeys on our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And if you would like to get them now, the Berkey Light's $199.95 plus shipping. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for the Berkey filters. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Durakovich, and he is, of course, working on the developing techniques and approaches to dealing with the people who are contaminated with depleted uranium. Now, what can be done for people? What can be done for our soldiers who do have depleted uranium and poisoning?
Well, therapeutic interventions in the chronic contamination with the organotropic radioisotopes is limited, because once those isotopes are incorporated in the final target organ, they sometimes cannot be mobilized. So in uranium case, it would be the bone in which uranium isotopes are retained. The possible intervention would be in the early stages after contamination, where different methods can be used to reduce the body burden of contaminated people. But I would say that prevention and non-exposure to uranium isotopes is the key factor here, rather than dealing with the very involved therapeutic interventions in the mass contamination of the human population with radioisotopes. Conclusion really is that not much can be done after uranium isotopes have settled in the body. At that point, we simply have to wait and see what the outcome will be.
Now, of course, prevention is always better than trying to cure something. In other words, avoid the disease if you possibly can. And of course, what's a concern to see the so many of the members of the population over there in Baghdad and the other Basra, the other major cities in Iraq today, living in an environment which must be just heavily contaminated with this uranium oxide dust. Would that be a fair statement?
It's a fair statement. In addition, we have some other scenarios as well. Afghanistan, for example, where we found the exceedingly higher concentration of uranium isotopes in the civilian populations in the villages that were in the vicinity of the of bombing sites after Operation Enduring Freedom. Strangely enough, we did not find depleted uranium in Afghanistan. We found non-depleted uranium, which has the ratio of the natural uranium, but it's not natural because it contains high percentage of the man-made isotope uranium-236. So that is another scenario in which our institute is currently involved. Normal concentration of uranium in the urine of a normal control subject, like for example in California, people would have 10 nanograms per liter. In Afghanistan, we found in some cases 2,000 and 3,000 nanograms per liter. There was a boy who came to his village after it was hit by the bomb, where 16 members of his family were dead on the impact, and that boy went into the crater rescuing members of his family, and his urine contained about 2,700 nanograms per liter. So we are talking about very high concentration, which is a consequence of uranium weapons in the scenario like Afghanistan, Balkan Peninsula, Iraq.
Now, does this uranium that goes to the bone, does this attack the bone marrow or produce any form of anemia, or is it just tends to, on certain instances, create a leukemia reaction?
Well, uranium isotopes are incorporated not in the bone marrow, but in the bone crystal.
Right.
And bone crystals are surrounded by extracellular fluid and the cellular elements. So by the virtue of alpha radiation, it can irradiate the stem cells in the bone marrow, which are in the vicinity of the crystal. So it could cause any effects that are related to the function of the stem cells, which is erythropoietic and leukopoietic blood formation.
Now, for our listeners, that means the formation of red and white blood cells.
That is correct.
Right. So go right ahead, sir.
Yes. So once in the vicinity of highly sensitive cells, uranium isotopes by alpha radiation can cause considerable damage, because the rule of radiation toxicity that has been formulated over 100 years ago by French scientists Bourgogne and Tribondeau says that less differentiated a cell is, more radiosensitive it is. For instance, brain cells would be less radiosensitive than stem cells in the bone marrow. But again, government studies at the Armed Forces Institute of Research have proven without any doubt that even the nervous system tissue is sensitive to depleted uranium, because they found changes in the brain of the experimental animals and in the cells of the experimental animals, brain cells, that are significantly changed after contact with the uranium isotopes. So we are talking about multi-organ effects of the radioisotopes. Now, you mentioned before that there are contradictory views in the on the internet and all over the media whether uranium is dangerous or not. Whoever thinks that it is not dangerous, they should know or they should learn how to read, because scientific literature abounds with the proofs of the deleterious effects of uranium isotopes on the human and animal organism, as well as on the ecosystem in the environment.
All right, finally, let's take a call from Roger in Pennsylvania. Roger, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you for your guest. My question relates to the chemistry rather than the radiology, and that is uranium and the various isotopes, I assume, are virtually identical chemically, and could you speak to the relative inertness or chemical reactivity? And I thought, like, for example, that very reactive hydrofluoric acid was required to process the uranium. And so that, what my question is getting to, is the uranium, say, an analog of calcium, and that's why it collects in the bone? And then further, what do you see as being the susceptibility to chelation techniques, and any recommendation to that end?
All right, thank you very much, Roger. The question is, with this...
I heard the question.
Right, go ahead.
Well, that's a very loaded question, and very good question indeed. number one, chemical form in which uranium isotopes enter organism does indeed determine what metabolic fate of that isotope will be and how is it going to be handled in the tissue. As I said before, soluble uranium compounds would be predominantly excreted through the kidneys and they would go to the bone. Insoluble would stay at the site of the contamination. Now, speaking of the calcium and uranium, whether uranium is calcium analog or not, I would say that it is not. Because calcium analog in the bone crystal should be strontium, which is 2+ bivalent cation, and uranium actually does not replace calcium in the bone crystal. Uranium rather stays on the top of the bone crystal like the bricks stay in on the top of the mortar. Anyway, it becomes a part of the bone crystal, although it is not really in any exchange process with the calcium ions in the hydroxyapatite of the bone. I don't know if I'm answering the question completely.
I think that was a very, very excellent answer. Now, it is the problem that we have, you know, is this constant radiation. What is the half-life of the radiation that we're putting into these people?
Half-life of uranium-238, which is over 99% of uranium composition, is 4.5 billion years.
So these areas will be contaminated for a good while.
Well, I don't think the Earth will be in existence after a billion years from now, because Earth is 4.5 billion year old now, same as the half-life of uranium-238. Solar system is 10 billion years, and the universe is 15 billion years. So universe actually is of lesser age than uranium isotopes. We believe that before the Earth came into existence, uranium isotopes were in the universe, and long after the Earth is gone, they'll be still dispersed as a radioactive dust in the intergalaxy stasis.
All right, fine. So that is uranium-238. Now, you also mentioned there is uranium-236 and uranium-234, I believe.
We are talking about millions of years of half-life.
I see. So it's a good long time. And it is the alpha particles that do the harm as far as the radiation is concerned, the bombardment?
Absolutely, yes. Alpha particle is the single most dangerous nuclear emission that exists in the nature as far as the living organism is concerned.
Now, is there a possibility that this dust will spread to other areas? In other words, with a dust storm, could it spread possibly from Iraq into adjacent countries?
Absolutely, yes. I have wonderful slides that I presented in Japan during my recent lecture series talk, and I show the picture of the dust clouds in the Middle East, especially over Iraq, that extend to Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Muscat, Oman, Qatar, southern Iran, and so on. No country really in the vicinity of the impact of uranium deposition is saved, especially in the event of the dust storms. Yes, uranium can travel considerable distances.
Well, if we are really contaminating these countries over there, I would be concerned that they would bring charges in the International Criminal Court against the United States. And even though the United States has refused to come under their jurisdiction, although we seem to want everybody else under their jurisdiction, I would think that certainly the publicity would be extremely bad for the United States, that we're quite willing to contaminate their country. We just don't want our country contaminated.
Well, it is, again, a very loaded question, because obviously no country of the world would want to be implicated in any accusations of the crimes against humanity. And during your program, I've been listening to the tune, Oh Beautiful, and your program is called Liberty.
Right.
The fact that we live in the United States means that we are in the country of liberty. That's why we can talk about these issues.
Right. So anyway, I know that you are very, very seriously concerned about what's going on. What can be done? Is there anything that could be done to get this information out more effectively across America so that perhaps we could do something about stopping the use of this depleted uranium weapons?
Well, this is far beyond the scope of my capacity because I'm a medical doctor and scientist, and I'm rather limited to my scientific studies of the effects of uranium. Naturally, I would like to see a depleted uranium being totally stopped in any scenario of the world conflict. That is simply a humanitarian concern of every single human being, whether medical or professional or not. I think what can be done is talking about these problems like we do right now, and building up awareness of the people who are listening to those programs that we are dealing with the serious issues of the risk not only to the human population, but also risk to the environment. One of these days, we will reach point of no return, where the Earth will be a sewage basket of every single toxin that is conceivable, and it will be really a difficult task to cope with all of these noxious and dangerous factors in our environment.
Well, of course, I do what I do 5 hours a day to try to get these ideas out, to try to get people to think, and hopefully that they will then try to determine where in the truth lies. And I'm firmly convinced, after having studied this and talked to a number of experts, that depleted uranium is a very real threat. And I believe, as you do, that there is a great deal of misinformation and disinformation up there on the Internet designed to confuse people who are beginning to study this. So our plea would be to become informed and then, of course, to become involved. And I think the one thing that could have an influence, people writing to their congressmen, writing to their local newspapers, and getting this information out. And we've seen here in the United States many, many people having an influence as far as the use of some of the genetic engineering, which I think we're really almost like we're playing God in what we're doing. But the politicians do listen. Somebody once said the politician can begin to see the light when he feels the heat. So is there any place that you would suggest our listeners go to get valid information that they can utilize and that they could put out?
I think the best place would be the website of Uranium Medical Research Center, which contains a relatively balanced and objective scientific views about the risks of uranium isotopes, and also it contains the legal implications or legal consequences of the use of depleted uranium. These things are being discussed at the International Court of Justice, at the Hague and Geneva, and there are many groups which are active in pointing out that we are dealing with a serious threat to the human habitat. Now, speaking of the politicians, I gave testimonies to the Congress of the United States several years ago. And although we believe that many politicians are interested in addressing the issue, the response to the actual risks of uranium contamination has not been satisfactory, because we see all kinds of groups and self-proclaimed experts on uranium that are trying to counteract every single information that would point to the dangers of uranium isotopes.
Well, I know I read many of these hearings, and they'll bring in one fellow who says it's bad, and about 10 people who say there's nothing to it at all. You've got nothing to worry about. You can trust us because we're experts. And sometimes I think they load those hearings very much on one side. Could you get your website out just one more time?
Well, my website, I don't have available with me.
I'm sorry, you put out your that email, wasn't it?
My email is asaf, ASAF at umrc.net.
All right, fine. And then you'll get them the website from there?
That is correct.
All right, fine. Well, look, I want to thank you so very much for being with us here on Radio Liberty and talking to our audience across America. Do you have any parting thought for our listeners?
My parting thought would be that every single human being, regardless of the nationality, regardless of the place where they live in the world, regardless of their conviction, should be really trying to objectively grasp what is the truth and what is propaganda about uranium isotopes and make their own opinion.
All right, fine. Well, God bless you, sir. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And our guest has been Dr. Asa Durakovich, who's one of the world's leading experts in this field. What a privilege it was to be able to interview him this afternoon.
Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hopker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention the Institute on the Constitution. This is a wonderful, wonderful program because it's designed to teach you and your friends and the people in your church about the miracle of our way of life, the origin of our freedom, which comes from God. We are the only country in the world that professes the fact that it's freedom comes from God, for we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that, of course, governments are instituted among men to preserve those rights by deriving their authority from the consent of the governed. That was the statement that surrounded the foundation of this country. Our freedom came from God. You see, that's the reason for the attack on God today. It is because if you destroy the religious foundation of this country, you destroy the freedom and you can have the dictatorship that these people want. They want a ruling elite who will rule the world, and that's what it's about. Well, you need to get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, get a kit, and you do that by calling 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068, and ask for a kit on the Institute of the Constitution. You can go to their website at iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. I got myself a kit. We're going to be putting out a program here in the Monterey Bay area in the very near future, and I hope many of you will want to attend. I also hope that if you're not in the Monterey Bay area, you'll get a kit. You'll call 410-760-9068. You'll learn about our Christian heritage and then help us to disseminate the information, the truth about our form of life, that we're a republic, not a democracy, and that we were established at one time as one nation under God. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and this is I wanted to mention that Dr. Grant will be speaking at the Santa Cruz Bible Church on Saturday from 10 to 3. Dr. Grant will be speaking at the Santa Cruz Bible Church from 1 to 3. And if you're in this area and you'd like to hear him, why, call the Santa Cruz Bible Church and make a reservation. They're going to be luncheon served. But this is the time when I need to remind our listeners of Radio Liberty is listener supported. And those of you who listen out across America, we hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, and our January newsletter is on the Illuminati. It is on the Whiskey Rebellion. And did you know that about the Whiskey Rebellion? That was in Pennsylvania in 1794 and its relationship to the Illuminati and, of course, to the a man who actually schooled a man named Edmund Genet in the mysteries. The man who schooled him was a man named Thomas Jefferson. You'll learn a lot about Thomas Jefferson. This is a fascinating newsletter. I learned a lot about a lot of things when I wrote it, and I hope you'll enjoy it. If you'd like a free copy of our January newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Of course, it's just between you and me. We do hope you'll want to subscribe, but if you don't, we'd love to have you have the newsletter. Now, you can go up on the website at RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down our letters there going back to the mid-1990s. You have our permission to copy them and reproduce them and pass them out, because that's how we're getting information out across America. People talking to people, talking to people. Passing out tapes, passing out videos. Any of the videos or tapes we've made, you have our permission to copy them. Because our major thrust is to reach as many people as we can in the time God's given us. So if you'd like to go ahead and pull down our articles, our newsletters, anything we've written up on our website, you're welcome to duplicate that. Of course, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day live on the Internet, and you do that. Of course, the Genesis programs for 2 hours, America Newsnet for an hour early in the morning, and Radio Liberty in the evening from 8 to 10 in the Pacific time. And during that same time, you can get us on shortwave. And if you have a shortwave set, fine. If you don't have a shortwave set, or you want a better one, we do carry the Sanjian 505. But we hope you'll tell other people about our program. If they're not listening on the Internet, then suggest they get a shortwave radio, and they can get any place they want to. But begin listening to our programs. Help us to get the information out across America. So we have the ability to reach people, everyone in America, by shortwave, by Internet. You just have to help us get the people listening. Remember, of course, to get the videos, the diapracts in the church, the story of the church growth movement, and a four-tape set on the church growth movement. You get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We want to get the video, Megiddo, the story of the Fourth World War, the Third World War that we're actually in right now, and the secret societies and the influence of the Masons and the Illuminati. Fascinating, very excellent video. It's called Megiddo, the March to Armageddon. My video, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you haven't seen it, you need to. My video, Iraq, the Untold Story. My video on 911, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for 911 contrived. Get those videos, duplicate those videos. Help us to get the truth out across America. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you again. May the Lord be with you.